Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm privileged to welcome a very accomplished entrepreneur and a social sector professional from Geneva, Switzerland, Mr. Sudhanshu Suds Saronwala. Sudhanshu, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Sudhanshu, or as Suds as he's called, is currently the Chief Impact Officer at Infarm, a Europe-based global food tech organization. He has worked with WWF Switzerland in his capacity as Executive Director for Communications and Marketing. He has a global mandate for the WWF brand and Earth Hour brand, and at the forefront, he has been at the forefront for the creation of cable TV, which includes Star, MTV, and Soundbuzz. So, Suds, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Well, it does take me back a long way, Ashu. So, I think the concept of being present at the dawn of industries has always been a big part, and I'll sort of play it out in terms of, you know, at least two of those milestones. Two of the three milestones being in that particular mm-hmm. area. The first was really the fortunate opportunity to be at the dawn of satellite and cable television when mm-hmm. I joined Star Television way back in the early 90s mm-hmm. In Hong Kong. And that was really about, what is this cable and satellite TV? How is it going to compete with, you know, the well-entrenched channels of today? And that was, I think, a very momentous point in my career, because it introduced me to what does the creation of an industry look like? What is a seismic shift look like at the point where you're not just bearing witness, but you're actually part of making it happen?
Okay.
So I think that would be one significant milestone.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second milestone was really at the advent of digital music, which is reflected in my time as an entrepreneur where I co-founded Soundbuzz. Mm-hmm. And this came about in a really interesting way, because I had a mentor from Unilever from my earlier days in advertising. And mm-hmm. and when I was sort of looking to move on from television and from satellite and cable TV and MTV,
mm-hmm.
He said, you know, if I was in your place and your age, I would try and find out a little bit more about this thing called the internet. It was just beginning to happen.
Wow.
And I just remember I met him in the US, and I remember just walking around that day thinking about little else except what he said, because he was a very wise person.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 months later, so from having had no background in the internet, but I was in the music-related business at MTV, mm-hmm. Applying the two together, I co-founded Soundbuzz, which was at the cusp of a new industry of digital music.
Okay.
And today, when you listen to Spotify or whatever, you're not really thinking about the days when it all started. So
correct.
That was a massive milestone for me. It also introduced me to the world of entrepreneurship for a good 10 years, which was fantastic.
Okay.
And I think the third milestone that I would really, you know, I sort of take it for granted, but then when I thought about it coming into this discussion,
mm-hmm.
was the opportunity to work in international environments and to live and be immersed in them. So, you know, in addition to India, having lived in Hong Kong, in Singapore, in Switzerland, and now soon in Germany,
mm-hmm.
the ability to actually live in a society is very different from visiting one.
Okay.
And I think that for me, you know, got triggered when I moved to Hong Kong for Star TV in the early 90s. And it really opened my eyes to how different people think, how different people work, how different people live, and how you get to appreciate it, because you always have biases. And these biases come to the fore when you're actually confronted with the situation, and you try and say, okay, let me think about why do they do it in this way and how can I learn from that?
Very
and that has been a remarkable journey for 30 years for me.
Very interesting. So, you know, Suds, let's talk about WWF, since you've just moved into Infarm.
Sure.
And, you know, you are if I may use the term, you know, a communications and marketing guru, what goes into building a successful set of brands like WWF and Earth Hour? I mean, WWF is an old established brand, but Earth Hour, when that hour is supposed to be announced, everyone across the world seems to know it. What has gone into building such powerful brands?
So I think that's a great question, and it really was a great learning over the decade that I spent at the helm of this at WWF International.
Mm-hmm.
I think and I'll sort of club it with a couple of thoughts related to commercial and, you know, corporate brands and WWF and Earth Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the fundamental aspect that I would highlight is that brands like WWF and Earth Hour have a social or environmental purpose,
okay,
that sort of underpins them.
Hmm.
And that's really fundamental to how people interact with those particular brands. So it's not necessarily transactional,
mm-hmm,
like it may be for a consumer product, which you,
right,
then buy and consume. But this is about the brand representing an issue that matters to a segment of society.
Mm.
And it's about the social contract. It's about the social contract between the individual and the state, in effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the brand like WWF actually brokers that social contract. So it is a really powerful platform that, and you need to be able to understand how people are thinking about a certain issue and how can you engage them,
mm-hmm,
in that particular discussion. So it isn't a one-way piece of communication. It's really about bringing people's views in to formulate that particular discussion.
Very interesting.
Earth Hour, on the other hand, was a very, very interesting example and an exercise that appended,
mm-hmm,
almost everything that I knew about marketing.
Correct.
Because it's what we call an open source brand. And in the first few minutes of being there and listening to this open source brand, I had very little idea. I'll be,
mm-hmm,
you know, honest enough to admit that. But then as I started understanding it and then developing it over the 10-year period that I, mm-hmm, was there, this is an aspect that you should look out for, and I would ask your listeners to look out for,
mm-hmm,
as to what is the concept of an open source brand. Mm-hmm. When you don't control the brand,
mm-hmm,
and you allow people to work with the brand. So,
mm-hmm,
when you say, Ashu, that people everywhere around the world are going to come together during that hour of Earth Hour,
mm,
and it just seems to come together,
mm,
it's because they actually are encouraged to work the brand.
Mm.
And they are encouraged to take the property and do with it as they would please and make it theirs.
Mm.
So WWF doesn't try to control the brand. We may issue some guidelines, we may, mm, issue a certain direction, but people in their own countries take the brand and make it theirs. So to put it into perspective, WWF is in 90 countries.
Mm.
Earth Hour is celebrated in 188 countries.
And in every home.
There are 98 countries where there's no WWF,
mm,
where Earth Hour is taken by society and created in their own image. So this is the concept of an open source brand, and it's getting bigger and bigger. I mean, think of the AIDS ribbon,
correct,
just to put it into context. That's another open source brand.
Mm.
So this is and I'm surprised that there aren't enough books written about open source brands as yet.
Well, maybe we'll see one book from you on this one, you know.
Yes, eventually.
You know, it was so fascinating when every time I think of Earth Hour and how every home in the areas that I live in, is conscious about it, you know, and people talk about it before and after. It's amazing.
It's great to hear.
So tell me, you know, we spoke about, you know, your introduction to the internet and soundbars. You know, you're obviously very well wired into the digital world. The digital world is changing the branding completely. What is the digital world doing to brands like WWF and Earth Hour?
So two really different examples, right? So WWF, well-established 60-year-old brand, needed to make the entry into the digital space, which was, mm-hmm, actually part of my mandate when I joined in 2009. Mm-hmm. Earth Hour, on the other hand, is a millennial, mm-hmm, in its own right,
mm-hmm,
and was born in the digital age and is so huge and is the movement sort of took root because it was digital.
Mm-hmm.
So there were two very different experiences that I was working with. And I have to say that it was a very powerful move for WWF to move from its, from its pure on-ground presence to move into the digital ecosystem.
Mm.
And that happened through a collection of, social media, through, digital, of course, simple things like websites, etc. But the main thing was that it took root at country levels. And WWF is a very, is a what they call a federated network with multiple, WWF, there's one in every country, there's one in India, there's one mm-hmm. in Switzerland, there's one in the US, and you name another 90 countries that go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And these countries all sort of lifted their WWF presence into the digital sphere. So it went in their language, and it went with their ethos, and it went with their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what sort of created this multitude of WWF in the digital sphere that we then sort of combined at a global level and took it into the digital era, which today at an NGO level, WWF is clearly the leader, especially in the environmental space, but even in the overall NGO space, I would say that it's probably in the top three in terms of digital presence.
Okay.
EarthHour, like I said, born in the digital age, for the digital age, for young people, took hold and spread like wildfire because it thought digital first. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is one of the real challenges when people are creating brands and looking at their digital avatars.
Fantastic. And do you see, other such movements happening because of the millennials who are thinking of the world in very different ways than what I used to? Such kind of open source brands coming up?
I think the open source brand movement is phenomenal. If you really think about it, you have brands which like I mentioned, the AIDS ribbon, right? Mm-hmm. And that now has 65 variants
mm-hmm.
around the world for different causes, from AIDS to autism, to different issues that it addresses, mm-hmm. right? Then you look at movements such as Black Lives Matter. Now, these are powerful societal upheavals.
Correct.
When it comes to racial justice.
Mm.
That is a pure digital open source brand
mm.
that has been created. So you've got, movements of this kind that are happening. And then, on the business side, you also see elements like, and people would relate to it, like the VLC player that you use, that everybody uses on their computers or on their phones. And that is an open source brand. People don't necessarily realize that
right.
It belongs to the VLC Foundation or the Firefox, the Mozilla Firefox, mm-hmm. which belongs to the Mozilla Foundation, but is open source and people feed into that. So there are several examples amazing. Of this kind that are out there, and especially in the social movement space, which is really fantastic to watch. And I'm always watching to see which is the next big social movement that is actually going to happen. I think, these are all seismic in their own right. I mean, think about a movement like the Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm.
The Me Too movement was purely online. It ended up with some people being taken to court, rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that there was a single corporation in the world that did not go back to its policies and look at where harassment stood, where gender equality stood. And that's the power of a movement of that nature, which is purely open source.
Incredible. I've often said that in all my podcasts, I learn something new. And today, talking to you, I've learned what is an open source brand. I mean, thank you. It's so incredible. So, let's talk a little bit about your new role at InFarm. Tell me about this organization and what it does.
Sure. So InFarm is a vertical farming organization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this sort of goes back to where I started off, that, I love being at the dawn of industries. And I mm-hmm. think that vertical farming is going to have a dramatic impact on urbanization and mm-hmm. on agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
For the simple reason that you can actually grow locally, you can grow food locally within cities.
Mm-hmm.
And you can the environmental impact of growing that in a vertical format is dramatic. I mean, we're talking about 95% less water, 90% less fertilizer, no pesticides, et cetera, because the LED lighting systems are now available at a certain cost to enable that. And renewable energy is available in multiple countries to actually allow you to do low carbon farming. So the InFarm is a pioneer within that space, and it's been around for about 5 years. It started out in Berlin, in Germany, and is now present in 11 countries. So its first range of products is out there. There are about 1,200 farms out there pumping out something like 65 to 68 varieties of herbs and plants and lettuce and tomatoes and mushrooms at this point in time. It is currently very much in the Western Europe, North America, and Japan territories. But it will grow beyond this without a doubt. But again, that concept of food, society's needs to have low footprint food, because you know your basil and your your kale doesn't have to travel thousands of kilometers to get to you, and you can do it literally within a few kilometers of your store. And in fact, in some cases, it actually grows in the store where you literally harvest it. And take it home. So it is a fascinating shift that's taking place when it comes.
So do you see this actually, you know, going into individual homes where every one of us can do have a small little vertical farm, or will it need some incredible infrastructure?
Well, the beauty of this is that it's modular. So when you look at it at a production center level, there are obviously several hundred farms in there. But when you look at it in a store level, you know, there are individual units that are in the store. So the idea here is that instead of trying to replicate it at home, though technically what you're asking is actually possible because you could treat your home as a store, but because you have a basket and you have a variety of different, you know, products that you want, we can see farming becoming personalized. So within the production center, Ashutosh could have his own farm, which then supplies him product every 3 days, which is fresh, it's, you know, low environmental impact, and it's high nutrition. And that sort of, you know, allows the economies of scale in a center to do it, but with minimal footprint to get to you.
Very interesting. And this vertical farming, I was reading somewhere, is both what, air farming and water, hydroponics or something, is it?
That's right. So it's hydroponics. The systems that we're working with at InFarm is fundamentally hydroponics.
Okay.
But you have hydroponics and aquaponics, which allow for internal, for vertical farming to take place. It really is a pretty interesting area that the world is beginning to now see gallop.
Wow. Well, good luck with this. So, you know, I'm going to move now to a few questions for you personally. You know, we've got about time for about, you know, 3 or 4 questions. Sajs, given the incredible bandwidth of things that you have seen, from technology to advertising to communication to open source brands to farming now, what does success mean to Sajs?
That is a huge question. I think for me, success is really about what is the difference that you're making, and what is the long-term change that comes with that.
Okay.
And I think that has been something that has been sort of repeatedly in my mind, though I have to say that the vector on that has shifted somewhat over the last 10 years. And while I've always looked at, you know, what's the shift? So like we looked at in television, you know, how was it changing people's entertainment, offering? That was an area. But over the last 10 years, and then music and digital music, how were people able to consume music digitally rather than physically?
Correct.
But over the last 10 years, I think I've looked at how can you actually make that systemic shift, but with a purpose? And how does it impact the planet as well? Okay. Because that was a huge learning over my decade at WWF, and it opened my eyes to many, many different areas. where it is possible for businesses to play a very proactive role, which is why InFarm appeals to me so much, because it's built with the purpose of making a difference to the planet and to society. And I think that that for me is really what success looks like. Can I make a difference, and can I make a long-term impact?
Impact, very interesting. And therefore, a segue into my next question from success is that what or who inspires you to keep pushing yourself in different industries and to the edge?
So I think sort of staying with the same motif, I would say that people and companies that have actually created a lot of these shifts are very, very inspiring for me. So if I look at a product, you know, on the entertainment front, like a Netflix, right? I mean, Reed Hastings and Netflix have redefined their business a couple of times, right? The first time they sort of, you know, disrupted the video rental business, the mailing business, and then he killed his own business to go into streaming, which redefined television. Now there are several people who followed, but that was the moment. That was the sharp end in terms of where it happened. People like Elon Musk and Tesla, huge purpose. So you've got moving away from fossil fuel powered transportation into battery powered transportation like cars. And you've got, and he's taken one step further, actually, just to tie into an earlier point, Ashu, that it's not a well-known fact to some, but Elon Musk basically turned all of his patents into the global commons. So Tesla doesn't own any patent. If you today wanted to build a Tesla car, you have access to the patents to go and build it in your garage.
Wow.
Okay, so that is the genuine, another version of open source.
Open source, yeah.
Okay, and so people like him who have now, there's a purpose to it, plus there's a business, you know, and there's a societal need for transportation. I also think that people, you know, and people can argue good or bad, but even the inventors of social media platforms have changed the way societies live and interact. So from the Facebooks at one end to the TikToks at the other, you have actually created a whole new paradigm for interaction amongst people, amongst friends, amongst unknowns to each other, just like-minded individuals. And I think that these are things that we don't think about, but they have changed the way that we live. You know, in 10 years, you know, nobody thinks of Twitter being 10 years old. Nobody thinks of Google being 20 years old.
Correct.
These are very young brands, and they have changed the way we live.
Absolutely. So I've got time for one last question for you. And this question is on failure. I've often said that in India, or for that matter in South Asia, parents don't teach the children it's okay to fail. And this manifests itself in our behavior patterns, that we must be first everywhere, we must be ahead of the line everywhere, etc., etc. And yet we keep failing. My question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes or failures?
You know, I did think about this a lot, and I'm not entirely sure I've found all the answers, because there's several failures in my life and in my career that, you know, I would want to. But there's one thing that I wanted to sort of highlight for myself and to share with you was that, and it seems like a very trivial thing, but it isn't really. So just hear me out. Is the importance of languages. And I have to say I failed miserably as I lived even within India, and I studied in several parts of India. I studied in boarding school in Bangalore, never learned a word of Kannada, lived in Hong Kong, lived in Singapore, in those two countries for over 18 years, didn't learn a word of Mandarin or Cantonese, or even Bahasa, which is actually close enough to Hindi. Spent 10 years in Switzerland with really poor levels of French. And I believe that that is something that we take for granted because we live in a largely, to some extent, Anglophone business world, we don't necessarily take the trouble to learn the languages. And if you are a marketing or a business person, you need to understand audiences and consumers, because that's ultimately who you're interacting with. Languages opens the window to their world and to the culture that they live in. And that for me has been a tremendous failing, because in many countries, I have had to rely on the interpretation of others and not have that interpretation myself. So I'm fixing that now. I've just finished intensive French, and I'm going to be learning German as we go into the new year, because I don't want to make the mistakes that I've made over 30 years of disregarding the importance of that language.
That is so, so well articulated. In fact, that's exactly what I've told many, many people over the years. I speak only two languages, Hindi and English, because I'm from North India. And I've always said this is the so-called arrogance of the Hindi belt.
Right.
Every other country or state must learn how to speak my language. And I will not make that. And I've also often said that is my failing. So thank you for echoing everything that you've said. Saj, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for being so transparent and honest about all your thoughts. And I wish you lots of success with InFarm and everything else that you're doing.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.